As an interviewer, I am Lynn Prom of the Morehead Public Schools, and the time is 2:30 in the afternoon on Tuesday, April 22, 1986. The place is the audio studio in the MSU Livingston Lord Library. The oral history agreement form giving ownership of this tape to the Northwest Minnesota Historical Center has been signed by the interviewee and the interviewer. Now, to complete this introductory record, Chuck, will you give your full name, your address, your position, your family, and what you are doing now?
Well, Lynn, my name is Charles Edward Watson. My address is 1206 6th Avenue South, Morehead, Minnesota. Family, wife Barbara, sons Kim and Todd, daughter Dana. At the present time, I am teaching at Morehead High School.
Okay. What is your position there, Chuck?
I teach social studies. This year I'm working with the ninth graders and have been social studies department chair.
I see. Where are your children now, Chuck? I remember one of them.
Well, Kim is married and has two children. He's an engineer with 3M and he lives in Woodbury. He's a... can't think what kind of engineer he is, but his wife is a chemical engineer and also works with 3M.
I see.
So they are a family of engineers, two little boys, Christopher and David. Todd is teaching in social studies in Brainerd and coaching.
Oh,
yeah. And Dana is also in Brainerd, and she's married to Paul Kath, who's also a local boy.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul's in accounting in Brainerd, and Dana is selling advertising for a radio station and has a little daughter.
I see. So you have three grandchildren.
Right.
Where were you born?
Minneapolis, North Side.
And your parents, were they from this area or from the Minnesota area? Or?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Uh-huh.
They are true-blooded and loyal North Minneapolis people. You couldn't pry them out of there with a 10-foot pole.
Your parents are still living there?
No, mother died about 2 years ago. Father's still living. Yes.
I see. What about your ancestry?
Well, on my mother's side, she's 100% Swedish, and her parents came from Sweden. Name of Helsing Johnson originally. Changed it to Helsing because there were so many Johnsons. Helsing coming from the area of Sweden called Helsingland,
mm-hmm.
which is a fairly common occurrence when people moved over here. Father's side, not that familiar, goes back to the German Dutch in Pennsylvania, I believe, with most of the paternal side of it coming from Wisconsin. Father's mother, my grandmother, is originally from Jordan, Minnesota, and then also lived in Frazee and Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ironic that I ended up here because I'm the only ones left in Minneapolis.
Well, is that so?
Yeah.
Then you get down there often, I imagine.
Oh, yes.
What is your educational background?
Graduate of North High in Minneapolis. Two-year course at the University of Minnesota. Then a recipient of the GI Bill as a result of World War II. Quit for a year, married, and then finished a four-year degree at Bemidji State, and then I've done graduate work at Mort State and also Bemidji and various other schools throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
Not having attained a master's, however.
When you said you had your two-year degree and then you went in the service?
No, I went to work for a year so I could get married.
Oh, I see. Oh, but you were...
I was in the service prior to going to university.
What part of the service were you in?
Navy, yeah, board ship, light carrier, CV, Kitkin Bay, and the CL light cruiser San Diego, last 2 years of the war.
I see. Well, you saw some action then?
Just a smidgen right at the end. And
I
then
see.
From then on, it was one big vacation for me.
Uh-huh. Then as a result of that, then you went through and finished your degree on the GI Bill.
For the most part, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
When did you decide that you wanted to get into education then? Was that about the time?
Originally, majored in recreation at the University of Minnesota. And did my practicum at Sister Elizabeth Kenny Institute, which was a very moving experience working with those young people who had all the physical problems of polio.
I
and got interested in young people as a result of that, and would have liked to have continued working at the Kenny Institute, but there was the funds available. My job was to prepare and implement a recreational program for those people, those young kids, and it was a real challenge because they were all in different degrees of abilities physically, but we had a good time and fell in love with the little kids. And then also I'd had a great deal of experience through the YMCA. I would point to the Y as a very instrumental part of my life, my young life, let's put it that way, and that I grew up in the ghetto of North Minneapolis, you might say, during the Depression time, and we lived in a tenement. There were three families in three rooms, which is not an unusual story coming from that area of the city. And as a result, hung around with some pretty tough little nuts around Broadway and Washington.
You were one of those kind of street kids then.
Right, very much so. Street and roof kids.
Is that right?
We played on roofs. And one day, a Y secretary by the name of Cully Ulander grabbed me and pulled me out of the gutter, so to speak, and said, "Hey, we got something better for you." And
how old were you then?
I was 7 years old.
Imagine that.
And got me involved at the Northside YMCA and forced the camp directors at Camp Yitohoppi to accept me as an 8-year-old as a camper. 9 was the limit as to allowable age to go.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, was very involved with camping at Camp Yitohoppi and with Gray Y, Junior High Y, and Senior High Y.
You had some good models then.
Very much so, yes. And I can thank Kelly Hulander for a lot of things as far as the redirection of my life. Because at that time, parents were so occupied with trying to provide a living for their families. Dad would get up at 4 in the morning and would walk downtown looking for any kind of work he could find.
Mm-hmm.
Not get home till 9, 10 o'clock, oftentimes without a cent in his pocket. And no food. Or if he stood in line for meat, they'd hand him a package. He'd get home and he'd throw it on the table and mother would open it up and they wouldn't know what it was.
Imagine.
But cook it up and eat.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I hope nobody else has to experience. But it was, in many ways, a profitable experience for us.
As you look back.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think we molded a lot of ways of life that were very important. But then, to continue on with the Y, I got involved with Camp Yitohoppi as a junior counselor, senior counselor, waterfront director, and so forth. So I spent a good share, if not all, summers for about 12 years at Camp Yitohoppi. And that really got me into kids.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, with my experience in recreation, I wanted to be a teacher,
mm-hmm.
or to get an education.
Very interesting story. One thing about those days, though, I imagine everybody was really in the same boat.
Pretty much so.
Oh,
yes. Yeah.
I suppose you didn't realize you were poor, or
no. Well,
you knew when you were hungry.
Yeah, we knew that. We didn't have clothes.
Uh-huh.
You know, the story about the kid across the street that came over to pick me up to go to school one day, and he had one of those long, heavy curlicue overcoats on. I forget what they call those.
Mm-hmm. Caracal.
Caracal. There you go. I've been trying to think of that for 2 weeks now. And mother asked him where he got it, and he said, "Well, it's been in the family." He said, "It's my turn to wear it. George has got the long underwear." I mean, that was the kind of thing, that the sharing that went on within families. And the whole tenement was a family. If you didn't have food and somebody next door had food, you shared. And so you got to know people very well.
Mm.
Became very close. Not like it is today.
Right. Yeah. How did you get your first, or did you work then at all? Besides, you went to the Y. That was your work then, I imagine. While you were still going to school, you worked. Did you get paid for that?
No, not really. In the summertime we did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, minimal amount.
But that was the only kind of job you had before, while you were in high school?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Well, I can't say that because we all had part-time jobs.
Oh.
I worked at Booth Cold Storage, loading refrigeration cars early in the war and after school summers. I dug graves at Crystal Lake Cemetery in the summertimes. Best paying job I had was digging graves.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you did student teaching in the metro area then?
No, I did student teaching in Bemidji.
From Bemidji,
right,
yeah.
Right, at the lab school in Bemidji on campus.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. But you majored then in a senior high or high school,
mm-hmm. Correct.
in social studies.
Right.
And coaching also? Did you get in?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I see. Then your first job then in teaching was where?
Right here in Moorhead.
Is that right?
Between graduating from Bemidji and teaching in Morehead, I had two other occupations. I went to work with the JCPenney company right out of college. I had been working with them part-time at Bemidji, married, had a little son, needed to support that family, and I would make about $20 more a month working for pennies than I would have gone teaching. And then plus the possible opportunity of management in the penny management program was conducive to staying. And so I did. And I stayed there for 5 years. And then a friend of mine started a real estate business over here in Morehead, happened to have the same name as mine. We oftentimes were thought of as being brothers. We were not. Les Watson was his name. And he enticed me to come over here and get in the real estate business with him, which I did. And spent another 5 years in real estate development and selling real estate and so forth. And then finally got into teaching where I really wanted to be in the first place. Mm-hmm. But it took me 10 years to get there.
Hmm. What was? Do you remember your first day on the job as you teaching?
Well, then I don't know that I can. I remember where it was, North Junior High in Morehead, and I was teaching the ninth grade. General business class.
What year was this?
1961.
So you started back in, actually, began your education career in 1961 then.
Right, right.
I see. Then you really knew, were happy to be there. It's something
very
you always
so.
Wanted, and here I am, finally.
Yes, finally.
Uh-huh.
And I've not been unhappy with that decision.
Uh-huh. Well, that's neat. Can you tell me some of the things that were different about that those first years teaching than, say, comparing it to now?
Well, I don't know that I can point to any great differences. I think there's far more similarities now. Than uh-huh. Certainly there have been changes. Attitudes have changed a little bit as far as kids are concerned, but not a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone through cycles with attitudes with kids, as we do in society in general.
Methods have been cyclical.
Yeah, but I think the major changes that I see are in the area of technical
mm-hmm.
kinds of things, such as computers.
How about class size? Does that remain pretty much the
pretty
same
Pretty much
for
the
you?
Same, I think. We had, for a period of time, they were quite large, but now they're getting down to where we were before.
Mm-hmm.
I think I average now about 26 kids to a class. But did have over 30 as an average at one point in time. But computers and TVs, audiovisual and things of that kind, as a major change, as far as education in general is concerned, I feel that the major change that has occurred is that we've lost control of our own schools, such as the principal. I think we've taken away some of the power that the principals used to have and have given it to the central administration.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether that's good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling about it, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which way is
mm-hmm.
best.
Mm-hmm. At North Junior High, then, when you went there, that must have been a new building.
About 4 years old.
Okay.
I think it was built in 57.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. And at that time, there was that building was filled right away then? It was a full...
As I recall, in fact, it became overcrowded, and they had to add a couple classrooms in the hallway, which I inherited right off the bat because I was a little man on the totem pole.
Is that right?
We had these long, narrow, wooden classrooms. That,
they're still there.
They're still there. I think they're used
still
for other things. Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I inaugurated.
And they started that right off the very first...
pretty much, as I recall.
At least one of the first few years.
I think it was the second year I was there that I ended
that
up
right?
in one of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting. Now, even before you started teaching, did you get involved in youth activities at all?
Oh, yes.
While you were still working at Penny's or?
Not so much Penny's
or as
I
real
didn't
estate.
Have time with Penny's because you worked about 7 days a week, about 10 hours a day.
Right. How about when you were in real estate?
Real estate, I got involved with more JCs.
I see. What did you do then as
and
far as the youth were concerned?
My portfolio was youth activities. And I suppose one of the major things that occurred during that period of time is a gentleman by the name of Bill Poole and I started what is now called the Babe Ruth League, Baseball League in Morehead. The first year that we attempted to have that program, which is 13, 14, and 15-year-olds, he and I literally walked the streets of Morehead and knocked on doors and begged kids to go out and play baseball. There hadn't been a program for that age group for years, and so they just weren't used to the idea. They were all going to the lakes or doing other things. But we were fortunate in being able to entice enough young men to play so that we had four teams. Bill and I managed the league for the first 6 or 7 years. Unfortunately, Bill died unexpectedly, so I carried on for him. Very proud of that project.
And that's still...
Today, it's just mushroomed.
A very alive and well.
I think there's about 16 teams, and they've been very successful.
Uh-huh.
And then following that, we got involved in hockey.
This is before you were even teaching, no?
No, this is...
After you were teaching,
right.
You got involved in hockey.
Right.
But baseball was before you were in teaching.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Why did you decide to get involved in hockey?
Well, we moved to 18th Street South, not too far from Lamps Park. And our two sons were growing up, and I had played hockey in high school. I played hockey in college, both at the university and at Bemidji. And I loved the game, and when I came to Morehead, it was non-existent. So I would take my little boys over to the ice rink and skate with them, teaching them to skate, and got involved with some of the kids over there playing hockey. And they showed a great deal of interest in the game, and so I would go over their evenings and help them, coach them, and so forth. We started a park board league.
Do you remember what year that was?
I'm guessing it would probably be around 1958.
Okay.
And got a senior high team together and played in a park board league with Fargo Parks and West Fargo. In fact, Al Rice was a coach over at West Fargo at the time. This lasted for a couple of years, 2-3 years, and the parents became very interested through their children and went to the school board and requested that hockey be instituted at the high school. Wasn't much interest on the part of the school board to do that, and somewhat like the soccer situation today.
Yeah.
But they were insistent, and finally, I think after maybe a year and a half or 2 years of prodding, the school administration, the school board decided, well, we'll give it a try. Shockey Strand was the basketball coach at the time at the high school and also the athletic director. And he came to me one day at North Junior and he asked me if I'd be willing to coach the high school team. Of course, I had been primed to say yes. And I wanted to, and so I agreed to do that. And I must say, Shockey was very helpful. The deterrent to hockey in Morehead was basketball. The basketball people were not very anxious to see hockey started. And,
why?
Well, because they felt we were competing for their young people.
At the same time they were playing.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And that's understandable. There's always that fear when a new sport takes over. Football people are fearful of soccer right now. And, of course, they both survive, and they do well. And it's giving more kids an opportunity to participate. But I can recall very vehemently the attitudes of people in the community when they'd see me.
Is that right?
Oh, yes. And I'm not being paranoid, believe me. I know exactly, because they said things to me that are not repeatable. But we survived. Interestingly enough, the superintendent of schools at that time, Mr. Swenson, said to Shockey the day that they approved the program, he said, yeah, give it to him. He said, it won't last more than 2 weeks.
Imagine.
He wasn't very encouraging at that time. He became encouraging later. Worked as hockey coach and taught at North Junior High for a couple of years. Got paid $100 a season.
Wow.
Flooded our own rinks, painted our own lines, worked like crazy. Rode school buses all the way to Baudette and Minneapolis and so forth in one day. It was an interesting experience.
And how many years did you do this?
I coached for 8 years.
8 years.
Gave it up because of time. At the time I gave it up, we were practicing at the Coliseum in Fargo, and I had to get up at 4 in the morning and get to the school and get the B squad on the bus and the A squad and get over there and practice for a couple hours and come back and then try to teach.
Right.
And by noon, I'd be dead.
Yes.
And I wasn't doing my main job any justice, so I finally had to back off and say I couldn't take it
anymore. How long did hockey season last then?
Well, hockey season is the same length as basketball season.
Now. Still is?
Yeah. It varies from year to year by maybe a week or two because they have the state tournaments. They alternate the state tournaments. One's earlier than 1 year and later the next year. But it starts in, as I recall, the middle of November and goes through the middle of, say, March, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were outside, then we had to wait till it was cold enough to get ice. And so usually it was the middle of December to the middle of February we were done,
mm-hmm.
Literally because of the ice conditions.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But we had a good time.
And did your sons play hockey then too?
My oldest son played hockey, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he played for me, much to his disgust. In fact, one time I had to put him down from the A squad to the B squad, and he didn't talk to me for 2 weeks afterwards.
Well, that's what you mean, have to be objective about the whole thing, don't you? As a person that was very involved in community with sports, was there any other involvement that you had with, particularly with young people, in the community besides the sports? I wouldn't think you'd have a great deal of time.
Well, I served on the park board for 12 years. And, of course, that deals with young people, although it deals with a wider sense of, or a wider degree of activities than just youth activities, but maintained an interest in them and worked hard to provide facilities.
When were those years?
I'm a poor one when it comes to years and time elements.
I guess what I was thinking about.
I think I went on the park board about 1965 to 77.
Okay.
Something like that, give or take a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
At a time when the park department was really expanding, mm-hmm. we were acquiring a lot of land because of an ordinance that had been passed by those of us on the park board that required any new additions coming into the city that they dedicate 10% of their land to park purposes.
Sure, a wise decision, wasn't it?
Oh, I think so. Either that or they had to give us the money, which would equal the value of the land. Generally, they'd give us the land.
Sure.
And they'd always want to give us the poorest land, too.
Uh-huh.
And we'd have to struggle with that. But we had a good teacher as far as parks are concerned. All we had to do was look across the river at one of the finest park systems in the United States at Fargo. And we were really a city that was using somebody else's facilities for many, many years. And we felt it was time that Morehead came of age as far as parks mm-hmm. were concerned. And so we put a lot of effort and time and energy into the development of the park system.
It shows, too, now.
I think so.
Yeah.
There are things that have happened that I'm very, very proud of.
Mm-hmm.
Although we had a lot of resistance to some things, once they were up and being used, people saw the value of them,
mm-hmm.
and I have no hesitation but what the facilities today are excellent. We need more. We always need more, but finances mm-hmm. dictate that to a large degree.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a beautiful piece of land north of Moore that just has to be developed at some point in time called the M.B. Johnson Park, and it's one of the nicest sites in the whole state of Minnesota, and I don't know that people realize that.
Mm.
It's being misused now in a way that I don't appreciate, but at some point in time it will be developed. But we've got a golf course now, we've got a sports center now, we've got neighborhood parks that we didn't have, we've got some.
And you saw a lot of those things, at least in the planning stages, I expect.
Oh, yes,
while you were serving on that park board.
And completions, too.
And completions.
Yeah, they were
mm-hmm.
exciting.
Right. So you've been really actively involved then when it comes to sports and recreation, I guess, all your life, haven't you?
I think so, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. My next question probably is, it answers already then. The question is, what are you most proudest of? And I would guess you would be along those lines, right?
Well, yes. I'm proud of many things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of being a father and a husband and a grandfather, and mm-hmm. I'm proud of being actively involved in the community. I think we all have to think in terms of paying back a community for what they provided us mm-hmm. as human beings. And fortunately, Morehead has been a community in which there have been a number of people who are willing to do that.
Right.
And I'm proud of being a part of that, yes. And I'm proud of dealing with kids. I think they're the greatest resource we've got in this country. And if we don't deal with them and help them and encourage them, mm-hmm. we're going to lose a lot.
Right.
And that's, I'm proud of doing something of that nature.
There are many people who are disillusioned about teaching. Have you had that happen to you? At times, probably, but
well,
generally, I guess, speaking.
In some respects, I have been. I think I alluded to it earlier. I'm, I've been disillusioned to a degree by the kinds of things that have been happening administratively. I've been bothered by a lot of those things. But generally speaking, no. I have not. I've enjoyed every minute that I've been in the classroom. I enjoy kids. I think they're the greatest people around. They enthuse me. They keep me young. They keep me excited about life. Mm-hmm. I gain far more from them than I ever have given to them. And for that, I'm very thankful. So I'm enthused about that, but I am somewhat concerned about some of the things that have happened administratively.
Then you're not one of these things that, one of these people that believe that kids are going to the dogs and this, or they're getting worse and the behavior.
No, far from it. Uh-huh. Every day I feel good about young people. Oh, there have been instances. I just had one this year that really bothered me. I won't talk about it, but those are so isolated that, mm-hmm. generally speaking, no. Mm-hmm. I'd be enthusiastic about it.
Do you think there's been a change from, say, the 1970s to now?
Oh, definitely.
And yeah. What changes do you see? Better? Or change for the better?
Well, one could argue the point. I feel that it is. I think kids are more responsive and responsible today in many ways as far as their education is concerned. During the late 60s and early 70s, we went through a period of time where we got to be again everything, so mm-hmm. to speak, and it created some problems. I think we gained something from it, however. I think we understand now the importance of listening to people, mm-hmm. be they young or old, and maybe we hadn't been doing that for some time. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to go to extremes in our society to make our points, and certainly they did. Mm-hmm. And I think we learned from it.
The schools seem to be taking on more of an expanded role in so many areas. Are you affected by that at all?
Oh, yes. Very definitely. In dealing, and that's why I went back to the ninth grade this year. I'd been teaching seniors, psychology, basically, and enjoying it. But I wanted to change, and I think it's good for us to change, and that's why, as a department chair, I try to encourage my people to change, you know, teach something else for a while, mm-hmm. get out of the rut, so to speak. And so I thought maybe I better do that, having encouraged them. But I really wanted to do it anyway, so I enjoyed the ninth grade before. I wanted to go back to them again. And I've lost my train of thought.
The question was about the changing the... I already forgot to. Why the expanded role?
Oh.
The expanding...
Yeah, the point I was going to make is one of the reasons I went back to teaching ninth grade kids is because I think there's a real need for a good rapport between adults and ninth graders. Not that I'm a savior or anything of that nature, but I think I've got something to offer to those young people. They're very open. They have some very serious problems. And I'm not going to solve them for them, but at least I can be a listening ear. And in that way, try to help them. There's more to teaching than the books, as you know. And these young people have some real needs that aren't being met sometimes. And if I could help in any way to try to meet those needs, I wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. And there have been some examples this year that I feel I've been able to help. Mm-hmm. I don't know that the general public really knows some of the real problems that these young people have. They're staggering at times. I have one young lady who has been sexually molested by her father. And it's one of the saddest things that I've ever encountered. But it's not that unusual, and that's the thing that really bothers me. And I think these young people really need help. Mm-hmm. And if I can give some, that's what I want to do. And that's why I'm, not that seniors don't have problems too, but I think for some reason I've been able to develop a pretty good rapport with these ninth grade kids.
Mm-hmm. Seems to me that ninth grade kids are more able to be more open about it and willing to talk about it. And
yes.
Then
that's
as they get older.
I'm,
yeah.
That's why.
Right.
And I know that, and that's why I'm where I'm at.
When you talk about these problems, can you, and you mentioned this one, can you think of some other things that have changed? For example, we never heard about that before, the sexual abuse kind of thing, and a few years ago. You know, it never was unheard of. And the same thing with drug problems and alcohol problems, all those sort of things. Can you reach back in your memory a little bit and tell us some of the maybe have a story or two about somebody you've helped, or some example of a child in trouble.
Well, the one that I alluded to earlier certainly has been helped, not only by me, but by many people. Fortunately, I tuned into it because she was having some problems. I could see her work was deteriorating, and so I got her aside, and we talked a little bit, and I was able to direct her to the school psychologist and counseling department, things of that nature. Well, there have been other examples, yes. There was a young lady a couple years ago who ran away from home at the age of 14, lived in hallways and apartment buildings down in the cities, came back, tried it again with her family, couldn't make it for whatever reasons. Ran away with a college boy at the age of 15, lived in a dormitory with him. It's just really a heart-rending story. She left home again, went down the cities again, got involved with drugs, got picked up using drugs, was placed in a home down there, ran away, was thrown in jail. Just all kinds of things. It's just unimaginable that this young person would go through all of this. Came back, tried it again, ran away again. About that point, I got tuned into her, and we were able to talk to her and try to help her and got her directed to the agencies locally that would help. And through those efforts and the efforts of many people, she went on to earn a degree at Hamline University and is now working on her master's degree.
Wow.
Have kept in contact.
Nice to hear success stories like that.
But, you know, it's for every one that you maybe helped, there may be 6, 7, 8 others that are really suffering. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, somebody isn't finding this out. And mm-hmm. that's so sad.
Mm-hmm. I would think it would, with stories like that, it would tend to make a person feel rather depressed about our world and the situation. But you don't seem to feel that way. You seem...
It's such a so many of them. There aren't many. There are a few, but they're so disastrous.
Right.
Mm-hmm. One other story, just very quickly. When I was at North Junior High, a young girl fainted in my room. This was the second year I was teaching, and so I took her into the nurse's office, and we were sitting there trying to find out what was wrong. Well, we found out that she hadn't eaten in 3 days. And the reason she hadn't eaten in 3 days, because the family didn't have any money. Mother was alone raising the kids, and she was too proud to go on welfare. She was struggling trying to maintain her family, and one young brother had diabetes. And so as a result of that, the food that the kids would get, they would give to this young man, this young brother, because he really needed it more than they did, the bread and what have you. Mm. So we managed to change that and get her on the hot lunch program. And she struggled with that. She didn't want a handout. She was so proud. And it was a beautiful thing to see, but by the same token, she also had to live. But to think that happens in Moorhead, Minnesota,
right.
And she was not alone. There are others, even today.
Well, I would say then that the stories that you just told, these three, are stories that I wonder if those kinds of things were going on when you first started in 1961.
Oh, I don't have any doubt but what they were.
We just didn't know about it.
As you started your question concerning schools, we are in a position now where we have to get involved with these things. We're almost forced to because mm-hmm. they're not being handled in some families.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate, but we have to react to that. We can't ignore it.
Mm-hmm. So then you support the expanded role then that the schools are...
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. I wish we were all better trained to help with them.
What would you like, as you think about education and as you're getting close, I don't know how soon you're thinking about retirement or even thinking about it yet, Chuck, but what would you like to see happen, maybe not necessarily to yourself in education, but to education in general? What would you like to see in changing, some changes made or progress?
Well, I guess one of the things that concerns me in preparing teachers to teach, or young people to become teachers, I don't think that we prepare them well enough in their subject area. I just read a recommendation, and I can't recall who made it. There have been so many lately. But one that I agree with is that a person, for instance, wanting to teach history should major in history for 4 years at the college level, and then have it determined that that's what they want to do with their history major, then take their education courses and prepare to teach. I don't think they come into the classroom with enough knowledge in the subject area that they're working in. I know I had to struggle with that, and it wasn't easy. And in talking to other teachers, they say the same thing. Too much time was spent during that 4 years for the bachelor's in education courses. Education people aren't going to like that, but I feel very strongly about that. If you can't impart any wisdom in the area that you're teaching, then what are you doing in the classroom? If you're just going to be an organizer and a facilitator, which is fine too, but you've got to have some real solid background in whatever course you're going to teach. I guess that's one thing that I would like to see changed, and maybe it is changed. And I can, as an example, use my second son who is teaching. He graduated from St. John's University, majored in history and philosophy. Didn't have a bit of education courses. Wanted to go into teaching, so he came to MS and got his education courses. Well, he's far better prepared to go into the history classroom than I ever was. He's got a wealth of knowledge. It's historical knowledge that I'm really jealous of. Mm-hmm. And I could never catch up to him. Mm-hmm. He's got a personal library that is quite good at this point. He's going to continue to expand it. And I think that's great.
You're saying maybe a good liberal arts education is much more important than going to getting education courses and so on.
Mm-hmm. I think one other thing in the area of education that would be important is to let these young people who think they want to be teachers find out at an early point in their career as to whether that's really it, rather than waiting until they're seniors in college, going into the classroom for the first time, and then finally deciding, good grief, this isn't what I want to do. I can't do this. I can't handle it, or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's a real mistake, to put in 4 years of school and then find out that you don't want to do the job because you just don't know. So somehow there should be, at some point earlier, some exposure to the classroom so that they can really find out, kind of an internship for a period of time.
We have an instrument now, too, called the perceiver. Have you been administered the perceiver, teacher perceiver?
I haven't. I've heard of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It seems to be doing a pretty good job of finding out whether a person is either talented or interested in really pursuing a teaching career.
When is that given?
Well, we give it in the Morehead schools. They give it for candidates who want to teach. So, as you're saying, it might be too late then.
Yeah, I would probably find
but
out.
They could. I wouldn't know why they couldn't give it to people who are going to go into the field of education or teaching.
Let's
in
say
college.
Between the freshman and sophomore
That's right.
year, something
might be
like
good,
that.
Might be yeah. very
That's
good thing
the
to do.
Instrument that might help. Great.
Right.
Our oldest son, Kim, in engineering, went 2 years at Morehead State pre-engineering and went down to the University of Minnesota. And as his first year at Minnesota, he got involved in the engineering intern program where he went and worked at Rosemont Engineering every other quarter. He'd go to school a quarter and he'd work a quarter. He paid for his whole education that way, but more importantly, he found out if he really wanted to get involved in the engineering field before he had spent 4 or 5 years.
Sure.
And it was a great learning experience for him. that kind of thing I think is very valuable.
As you look back on your career as an educator here in Moorhead too, and then look ahead to the future, can you think of anything else that you would like to see some improvement, maybe administrative-wise, maybe community support? Or?
Well, I think I made mention of the fact that I really feel that personally that the running of the school should be placed back in the principal's hands. They're closer to their people in the school. They're closer to the situation, and I just think that that's where it belongs, and that's where it was intended to begin with. For some reason, and I don't know if we're unique in this school district, but we've placed that responsibility more and more in the central administration, and I think they've got a lot of other things that they should be doing rather than trying to run schools. And it's gotten to the point now where we hardly do anything without getting their approval. Mm-hmm. And I don't agree with that at all. I think it's sometimes, maybe I look at it in a jaundiced way, but it might in a way help them justify their positions, but I don't think that that's the purpose of education.
Right. What would you like to see happen? Is there anything you'd like to see happen in education as far as community support? Do you think people in Moorhead do support education and the community?
Oh yes, I've always felt that way. This is an educational-minded community, although it can always have more support. And if you mean should they become more involved in the schools that their the specific schools that their children are going to, I'd say yes. Mm-hmm. The more that we can develop a rapport between the parents and the teachers and the students, the better off we are. Mm-hmm. There's no question in my mind that that's important. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, this community is education oriented. Suffice to say that, the study of the last North Central, I think they said something like 21 or 22,000 people every day in the city of Moorhead go to an education environment.
Is that a fantastic number?
And it just boggles the
mm-hmm,
mind.
It is.
And when you mention this to people who do not live here, they think you're lying. Mm-hmm. But it's true. When you think in terms of janitors and cooks and teachers and students and administrators and all, everybody, that it's just...
And community ed, which is really
yes.
grown. And
yes, and very important.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking forward to retirement?
Not really. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I am not one of those that sit around and say, gee, I can't wait to get out of here, mm-hmm. or this, that, and the other thing. I really feel sorry for anybody that feels that way. And over the last few years, there have been a number that have felt that way. Mm-hmm. And I understand why. But I just might stick around till I'm 70. And I know a lot of people would groan at that, but... I'm just enjoying myself, mm-hmm. and why not do what
There's
you're
nothing,
enjoying?
That's right. If you've got your health and you like to do what you're doing, why not continue? I agree with you there. I just read something the other day about when it came to an article on depression and stress and so on. It said that the biggest key to getting out of depression or to alleviate stress is to... live a life of service, is to serve other people. And it seems to me, Chuck, that that's probably you're a living example of that from your community service and your working and serving students' needs. Perhaps that's why you're enjoying, and the fact that you enjoy what you're doing, maybe that's why you're in such good health and in good spirits, and you count yourself, it seems to me, a very lucky man. Am I right?
Oh, definitely. I take very literally a line in the J.C. Creed that says something like, service to humanity is the best work of life. I agree wholeheartedly with that. I through my Y days and what have you, that's just been kind of a goal of mine. And I don't want to be misread on this because I'm certainly not any kind of a savior or anything of that nature, but I thoroughly enjoy working with people, particularly young people, but... Park Board, I was on the Planning Commission. I think it's important, as I said earlier, to work for your community, to be involved with it, not to sit around on your hands and only be a griper. That type of person I have really little time for. It's extremely important to do that. And if we can impart that to younger people, I think the community is going to benefit from that too. So yeah, I'm convinced. I've been asked to continue to be involved in community. People ask me from time to time to run for the city council. I thought about it, thought about other kinds of political activities, and the more I thought about it, the more I turned it down, and I've decided now to be really involved in my church, and that's where I've more or less been directing my extra energies, if you will, mm-hmm. To activities for the church.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed interviewing you, Chuck. Is there anything else that you'd like to add, or any question that I should have asked you that I didn't ask that you would like to...
No, I don't think... I think you've done a good job, Len. I appreciate your having me as part of this. I would certainly be remiss if I didn't say that much of what I am is attributable to my wife and the fact that she's put up with me, but has been very active herself in community affairs and really kind of has directed me in that area too. So,
thanks very much.
You're welcome.